And by golly, here we are. This is what you need to know about and see today. Ukraine wants Starlink to hit Russia, but Elon Musk says no, niet. He says it's time to negotiate an end to this war. Meanwhile, Ukraine's fired defense minister, yeah, the guy who used to be in charge of the war, he is now heading to Palantir. Wow, what does that portend? And in America, there is an absolute freakout about an AIPAC defeat in Michigan.
They want to cancel Thanksgiving. They want to cancel Christmas. Look, these communists hate America. They hate capitalism. They want Sharia law. They hate Jews. They hate Christians. They hate capitalism. They hate America.
Israel loses an election, and it means there's not going to be Christmas anymore. So sad. So crazy. What's he talking about? This is the effect. Let's do this. Hello, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's get started. For the Zelensky government of Ukraine, there is some bad news tonight on top of a lot of bad news that they've been getting recently. Here's the latest piece of bad news. It's kind of a stinger, if you know what I mean, because it takes away something the Zelensky government and its NATO and its EU war partners have long depended on and hoped for. Here is the story in a nutshell. So just this morning, there was another Ukrainian drone attack in Russia. It killed about 13 people, at least 70 people we understand are injured. So this is a big one, right? There's been a lot of them, but this one has bigger numbers than we usually see. It happened at an oil facility in Nizhnikamsk. This is a trend that we've been seeing, whether it's in Nizhnikamsk or other places. In fact, I've got some images I want to show you. These are the images of all the targeted attacks that we've been collecting lately. Here's the latest one. In fact, that pretty much tells the story. These are attacks deep into Russian territory. The targets have included schools, buses, oil refineries, railroad overpasses, beaches, resorts, apartment buildings. You notice that none of these are military targets, right? These are all civilian places. Look at this. That's a beach right there. And most have been celebrated by Western politicians and members of the media in places like the UK. They have passed off these images as some kind of false reality that Ukraine was winning the war. Look at these headlines. The Atlantic Council, how Ukraine's deep strike campaign is causing cracks in the Kremlin. Look at this CNBC. Ukraine's drone playbook is wreaking havoc in Russia and upending where NATO wants to invest. Wreaking havoc? Ukraine gains upper hand in aerial war against... That's maybe the funniest one from Le Monde, because this is not exactly an aerial war. These are drones hitting civilian targets. How is that an aerial war? Anyway, here's the real bad news for Zelensky. Those attacks that I just showed you, they cannot continue without targeted satellite guidance. And the best satellite guidance is not Ukrainian. Comes from the United States. Specifically, it comes from one man. His name, Elon Musk. And according to all the reports that have come in within the past 24 to 48 hours, Elon Musk is refusing now to allow his company Starlink to be used by Ukraine to target deep inside Russia. Ukraine has become accustomed to relying on Starlink, by the way, in the past to coordinate attacks, guide tactical drones, target Russian military positions, tanks, and supply trucks. But it's mostly been done within what they call Ukrainian territory or Russian-occupied territory regions, as they're called by the West. Crimea, for example. But Zelensky doesn't want to just use them there. He wants to go further. And Musk is saying, no, I'm not going to let you do it. Why? Well, according to reports in The Atlantic, who broke this story, by the way, Musk believes it's time for Ukraine to stop bombing and start negotiating an end to the war. And allowing them to use Starlink simply as it sees fit would prolong the war, according to Musk. So why is this really bad news for Zelensky? The first and most obvious reason is that already under his leadership, things are bad. The Ukrainian military has been losing on the front lines. Now they've lost access to the Black Sea. Russia's also been pummeling Ukraine's infrastructure in the last week and again over the weekend. Anything that supports Ukraine's war effort has been demolished. Power, oil, gas, water plants, drone distribution and manufacturing centers, they're all being hit with missiles with Ukraine having no way of stopping most of those attacks. Why can't Ukraine stop those attacks? Because Ukraine has run out of Patriot missile defense systems as well. So Zelensky met with Mr. Trump, as you see there in the picture recently, and he asked him to replenish. However, Mr. Trump essentially said something to him like, what are you kidding? We don't even have enough Patriot missile systems for ourselves to use against Iran. How are we going to give them to you? So then Zelensky argued for something else. He said, give us access to Starlink. And he told Mr. Trump to make it happen. Zelensky asked Mr. Trump to tell his friend Elon Musk to let Ukraine use the Starlink system so that they can continue bombing the Russian cities. But Trump said he did not agree. According to the reports that I've read up to this morning, Mr. Trump heard what Mr. Zelensky had to say, gave him a hearing, but he did not intercede. He did not say, I will intercede on your behalf. He said, okay, I heard you. That's good enough. So here's the real question we're left with now, right? Why is Musk refusing to allow Zelensky to use Starlink? Well, perhaps it's become evident, if not obvious, to U.S. intel and Pentagon officials who talked to Mr. Musk that the situation for Ukraine has become grim, to say the least, which is why Musk says it's time for Zelensky to, quote, deal. Then there's this guy. Let's introduce him. See that dude right there? That's Michael Fedorov. Actually, he pronounces his name Mikhail, as most people do in Ukraine or in Russia. He was Ukraine's defense minister until recently when Zelensky fired him. But according to Fedorov, when Zelensky said, I don't want you anymore, he got a call from Palantir, who said they will give him a job. Palantir, safe to say, you probably know this, is the world's most notorious data analytics slash high-tech espionage companies in the world. If Fedorov is talking to Palantir, right, that means they have real inside information, Palantir does, on what's going on in Ukraine. After all, they're talking to who? They're talking to the guy who used to be the defense minister, right? Certainly, if anybody's going to know what's going on in the war, he would. So now, does that also mean that Musk now has a lot of information about what's going on in Ukraine? Yes, and here's why. Musk and Palantir are very close. Over time, we've read report after report showing us this. Recent reports have shown that the two companies have tried to team up on certain projects. So if they're talking to Fedorov, right, Palantir, it's likely Musk is talking to Fedorov as well. Or at least he's privy to whatever it is that Fedorov has been saying about what's going on in the war. So is that why Musk perhaps is saying to Zelensky, new Starlink for you? Makes one wonder, doesn't it? Meanwhile, the really big political story in the United States is the defeat of the Israeli lobby in Michigan. Israel reportedly poured as much as $60 million, $60 million to control one campaign seat in Michigan. And that pays, like, what, $180,000? She gets $60,000 for a job that pays $180,000. Does that make any sense to you, by the way? Obviously, it doesn't. Here's the candidate. This is the candidate that they backed and gave all of this money to. You're going to love her.
And in the United States Congress, I will continue to fight for the people of Israel. I will continue to fight for Israel's existence. Israel comes to me in my dreams. I see Israel's future, and I know that Israel will continue to exist for the Jewish people.
The people in the background, they're like, or maybe they're wearing earplugs, because you almost have to listen to that. So that's Haley Stevens. Sorry, I got something in my eye. Haley Stevens has Israel come into her dreams every night, as you heard her say. It's a speech that has become that thing I just showed you. It's become like a worldwide meme illustrating the lengths that politicians will go to in the United States for their share of Israeli money or Israeli donor money or AIPAC money or whatever you want to call it. And it's distributed big time to politicians. They say it's the Zionist lobby, and they back candidates almost always in the United States. And by the way, they're so good at this, they almost always win. They almost always win. You never hear of them losing when they put money into a candidate. Well, it's not just Israel, by the way. There's a lot of others that do the same thing. But Haley Stevens, she lost. And that's making America's pro-war and pro-Israel crowd absolutely crazy, especially given the fact that she lost to a Muslim American. Now, did I say crazy? Here is Ted Cruz, Republican. Listen to what he is saying about this.
They want to cancel Thanksgiving. They want to cancel Christmas. Look, these communists hate America. They hate capitalism. El Sayed is also an Islamist, as is Mamdani. And look, you see the green-red convergence where the communists and the Islamists, they want Sharia law. They hate Jews. They hate Christians. They hate capitalism. They hate America. All of this is coming together in a way that is really a toxic, toxic stew.
What? No more Thanksgiving? We're not going to be able to celebrate Christmas anymore because of the communists who've taken over America. The, what did he say? The Islamists, right? All because AIPAC wasn't able to win an election. I know. It's maddening. It's absolutely hair on fire, crazy stuff. This is a freak out that's taking place in my country right now, all because AIPAC or one of AIPAC's recipients lost. And this guy who now, Ted Cruz, wants to be the next Lindsey Graham, he wants AIPAC's money. So this is a performance he's doing for them right now. Look at me. Look what I'm saying. Send me the money that you used to send to Lindsey Graham. I'm going to be the guy who gets all that stuff now. It's sick. It's just sick. Right. And in case you think it's just Ted Cruz and the Republicans who are taking money from Israel and other donors, it's not just Israel. You would be 100% right. All right. I mean, or wrong. Either way, it's not just the Republicans. It's the Democrats also. Democrats, in fact, I could argue are worse. Here's one of the best known Democrats in the United States. This is the guy. The guy you're about to see on your screen is the guy who literally put Bill Clinton in the White House. Really smart Southern strategist dude, right? Now, he's saying that because of what just happened in Michigan, that's it. I'm going to take my ball and I'm going to go home. I don't want to play anymore. He says he's going to quit the Democratic Party.
To talk about the larger Democratic Party post the election in Michigan going forward, I am not going to be in the same party with Hassan Piker. I can tell you that right now. If he becomes a force in the Democratic Party, I'm out of here. I have no intention of ever being in the same political party with that guy. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that a majority, overwhelming majority of Democrats agree with me.
Or maybe they don't, at least not the young ones. What's interesting is he's referring to Hassan Piker, who is another very famous Muslim American guy who's critical. He's an influencer. He's very critical of Israel and AIPAC's influence, not to be confused with Abdul al-Sayed, who is the actual winner in Michigan. By the way, you should know something about al-Sayed. I checked. Israel does not come to him in his dreams. Just so you know. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. When we come back, we are going to be talking to one of the young men who is driving the change in America, asking good questions. Emphasis on young. Ethan Levins is going to break down what's happening in the U.S. politics from the vantage point of those who are actually making a difference in the United States by asking good questions. Don't go away. We're going to be right back. And as promised, we're going to have a conversation now with Ethan Levins. He's an independent American journalist. And I had him on recently on one of my live streams, and I was so impressed with him. I said, hey, let's get him on the big show as well. So here he is. It's like he's becoming my new bestie, I guess. Ethan, always good to talk to you, my friend. How you doing?
I'm well. It's always a pleasure to speak to you as well, live from Tripoli, Lebanon. I'm not being mixed up, but it's always a pleasure to speak with you and watching those clips that you showed. I am mind blown that that's the status of our country right now.
It's silly, isn't it? All right, let's go down the list of some of the things that we talked about. I think it'd be fair to start with Starlink. This is interesting. What do you make of the fact that Elon Musk is telling Zelensky, no, you cannot use Starlink. In fact, I want you to sit down and negotiate a deal. Is he right to say that?
He's 100% right. You know, there's no victory for Ukraine in this. They're losing on the battlefield. This aerial war that they're saying that Ukraine is winning, this is completely false. Odessa has been smashed. Ukraine does not have access to the Black Sea, essentially. Their logistics are being smashed on the front line on the eastern half. The Donbass is about to be captured by the Russians. And they see the writing on the wall. Elon Musk sees that further strikes into Russia does nothing more than provoke. More Russian civilians are dying, and he does not want to have that on his hands whenever Ukraine falls on the losing side of this. And if Elon Musk, who's the world's richest and could be the most powerful man, is seeing this reality, then I think it's time for all of us to finally sit back and understand that this is a losing fight for Zelensky at this point, but he'll never admit it.
You are a unique voice in America because you are young, you're obviously very well-read, you follow geopolitics from outside the sphere of that closed little loop that is contained by CNN and Fox News and, I don't know, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, a very, very, very small group of things that too many Americans listen to. Do you believe that people not like you but others now, general attitude in America is changing when it comes to wars in general and Ukraine specifically?
Oh, 100%. And it all started with what happened in Gaza, started with the Israelis, but it's now shifting to what's happening in Ukraine because not a lot of people understand this. The U.S. has given Ukraine far more military aid, far more financial support. It is up to the hundreds of billions compared to the Israelis receiving tens of billions. Mm-hmm. So if you want to point at the homelessness on the streets, if you want to point at the Americans in poverty, about the credit card debt, the American debt, if you want to point at things like that, you need to point at Ukraine, also point at the Israelis. But the American opinion on all global conflicts, we're starting to realize a lot of the average Americans starting to ask the question, why are we so involved with this? This is happening halfway across the world. Why are we involved with this? We're not only involved. It isn't like we're just, you know, helping with diplomacy. These are our tanks, our anti-aircraft, our guns, our drone technology. This is everything that we produce here now, Patriot air defenses, that we're shipping over there. And it's pretty easy to put one and one together and realize that if you're fueling weapons into a war, you're not doing anything to solve it. If you're shipping weapons all across the world while civilians are drowning in debt, you're not engaging in a global police. You're not the police of the world. You are essentially the warmonger of the world. And Americans who are essentially kind of isolated on the Western Hemisphere, they want nothing to do with the war, but the government does.
Do Americans understand, and how much does it frost their behind, that this country, just using Ukraine as an example, you're right, we could use Egypt, we could use Israel, but just using Ukraine as an example, because all of these countries have that, things that we Americans don't have. I'll give you some examples. In America, you're not guaranteed maternity leave. In Ukraine, you are. In America, you're not guaranteed overtime pay if you have a regular job. In Ukraine, you are. In America, there is no universal health care or anything that even comes close to it until you turn 65 years of age. In Ukraine, they have it, yet they're getting our money. How much does that frost the behind of Americans, you think, if they know that even?
Well, the more and more that Americans are attached to social media, they're watching great shows like yours, we're starting to realize this. A lot of Americans are starting to realize that at home in America, we don't have those things. The maternity leave, simply things like credit card debt, the things that you just listed off. Why are we giving the billions of dollars to the countries that have these things? If we want to revamp our health care, if we want to improve the lives of Americans at home, why are we shipping off billions of dollars that can help us? Because countries that already have it. Ukraine and also Israel, all of these countries that we give foreign aid to, all of them essentially have a better healthcare system, if not a free healthcare system, for crying out loud. Like you listed with Ukraine, hundreds of billions of dollars, not just since 2022, we could go back since 2014. How much money the CIA has been scraping under the rug to overthrow the regime in 2014 and to install these puppets all in Kiev and to just fuel weapons for essentially over a decade now into Ukraine. Instead of selling all of these weapons, instead of producing them, how about fix the health care at home? And Americans won't.
Why don't they, though? Here's that's the $60,000 question. I mean, if tomorrow I elect you, Ethan, and you would probably be really good as an American senator or an American congressman, and the first thing you did is you got this great new job representing America, and you're focused on Israel and Ukraine, and you're focused on Egypt, and you're not focused on your own family that could use some of these benefits. How does that happen? Why does that happen? What's your take?
It's lobbying. It's lobbying. It's big money. And it's these people are just, it's corruption. Undeniably, it's corruption. You have AIPAC. You have senators traveling over to Ukraine having secret meetings with Zelensky, with Palantir. Now the world's richest man, Elon Musk, is all involved into Ukraine. So you have these major tech companies like Palantir that are creating AI drones that are monitoring people over these countries that are now tracking targets that just so happen to be civilian at this point, it looks like. And of course, the military industrial complex, these defense contractors are making so much money. And let's say that a Lockheed Martin, which is making hundreds of billions of dollars a year, they come to me, we'll give you $5 million if you just vote ahead this Ukraine aid bill. Of course, if there's a senator in America, what we've seen, they're accepting this. It's bribery, it's corruption. Like you said, there's just no other reason for this. You're elected to serve the American people. So why are your interests overseas with Zelensky, with Netanyahu? Why are these people so determined to help these other countries with these long, drawn-out speeches, a campaign slogan about them? Why can we not focus on America? And it's because of corruption. It's because of Palantir. It's because of Lockheed Martin. And sadly, I don't see a way to draw that out of politics until you elect people like we saw in Michigan that maybe give it a chance to try to shake things up, to try to deliver for the American people. But then again, it's still never guaranteed.
Is there an anti-establishment movement that is taking place in America right now? And is it being led primarily by young people, I guess, under 40, if that's a good number?
Oh, 100%. That is undeniably true. You know, it's whether it's people with Tucker Carlson watching the things Thomas Massie is saying, or people like you're saying, or people like me are saying, this is the message that resonates with people. People want life to be better. People want to stop seeing wars in Ukraine, wars in the Middle East, because they realize now, we have phones now, we can read a history book, that the reason this is all happening is because of these American politicians. So everyone asks the question, if we're the ones that are causing these wars in Europe and in the Middle East, why are we doing so? And it draws back to what I said, of lobbying, of hidden money, of stock trading and all of that. And it's just a shame. It's a shame. And a lot of the younger generation, a massive chunk of it, and like you said, it's not just 18 to 25-year-olds, it's under 40, under 45, even upwards of under 50. All it takes is one question. All it takes is somebody to see one thing and question one thing. And it really hits you hard whenever you question Israel, when you question Ukraine, especially for some reason. These people hammer on the media so hard at you. It's like a taboo subject. How dare you question our aid to Ukraine? How dare you question our aid to Israel? And all we're doing is asking a simple question. Yeah. And then that makes us dive deeper and realizing that maybe the U.S., these politicians driving hundreds of billions of dollars into these countries like Ukraine to fire drones that are not on the front lines, like you said earlier, they're killing civilians. How is this a victory? How is this good for any humanity? How is it not good for the American people? How is this good for humanity in general? And this is the question we're asking, not even hard questions.
It's almost comical. I mean, I just did my little intro there that I put together this morning when I woke up and I started thinking about what I think is important in the world. And it almost wrote itself. And this, first of all, this woman running for office in Michigan who screamed to the world that Israel comes to her in her dreams. Why in the hell would you say something like that? That you want to be you want to represent Michigan, and you're trying to get elected by telling the world how Israel comes to you in your dreams, not Detroit's problems, Israel. And then on the other hand, you know, you got Ted Cruz saying that because AIPAC wasn't able to buy a seat in Michigan, it's the end of Christmas and Thanksgiving. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. This is like a Fellini movie.
It's hilarious, and people are just not buying it anymore. They're giving just pitiful excuses about this. We're losing Thanksgiving and Christmas. What, are we going to lose Easter next? Because a Muslim American guy was elected. Oh, he hasn't even won the election, by the way. He just won the Democratic nominee. And this woman, Haley Steven, you're in Detroit. I promise you there's a lot of problems in Detroit that you need to worry about besides Israel and your dreams. This is psychotic. It truly is psychotic. And these are why we're asking these questions. It's entertainment. It's truly hilarious, and it's embarrassing to the world. It's embarrassing to these other countries. This is our politics. It's just who can just love Israel more. How about something like health care? How about wages? How about gas prices? How about just making it easier to live in the world's richest country? Why are we running on a campaign slogan about Israel? Why are we wearing the pins on the suits with the Israeli flag, with the Ukrainian flag? Why not just have the American flag? Why are these people so concerned with these other foreign countries? Leave them alone. Let them figure their own stuff out. We need to focus on the United States, because I promise you, Detroit is not a great place right now. A lot of these American cities are not a great place right now. Yeah. So if you're supporting shipping money from the budget to these other countries, honestly, you're a traitor. And that's a strong word to say, but honestly, what other word can we say? It's humorous. It's embarrassing.
How hard is it for people your age right now to get started, especially when it comes to housing? I hear, and, you know, I've already bought homes, and I started off, you know, working in TV, and we did okay, but we were able, my wife and I were able to buy homes for, you know, anywhere between $85,000 to $150,000 to raise our kids and start our family, and that was a lot of home. I mean, I bought a home on a golf course on a lake for that kind of money. I don't think you're going to be able to touch anything like that today, right?
No, not at all. And a big chunk of that is because of BlackRock, which is yet again inside the United States government. It'll never help. But rent prices are absurd. I'm a renter, and the rent pricing is absolutely absurd. A little brother just graduated high school, and he just curiously was looking at apartments. He calls me a few weeks ago and says, is this a normal price? I couldn't believe it. I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars. The housing prices, which have no business of coming down. Like Trump said a few months ago, he doesn't want to see the housing prices come down. He doesn't want to see this. It's just the cost of living is getting worse and worse. And it ties right to the foreign policy. Why are we not giving aid to American citizens? Why are we not allocating this money into this part of the budget? Why is the budget so lopsided for these foreign citizens? The economy is in a really bad spot. Most Americans are very unimpressed. They have zero confidence in the economy. More Americans are working multiple jobs now than ever. Credit card debt is at an all-time high. All of those things combined simply means that Americans do not have money. They do not have the money to buy basic products. Credit cards is something that you use when you go buy milk and groceries. And people are having to take loans for that now. That is very depressing. Yeah, no. That's sad to think about. It doesn't need to be like this. It doesn't happen in other countries. They're nowhere near as rich as we are, but it happens in the United States.
No country in the history of the world has ever accumulated the kind of debt that we're looking at right now in the United States. It's absolutely crazy what the debt is. And under Mr. Trump, just like, to be fair to Mr. Trump, just like under Mr. Biden and just like under Mr. Obama and just like under Mr. Bush, it just keeps going up. No president has ever, at least in my lifetime, has come to office and said, okay, the first thing I'm going to do is we need to spend less. No, they spend more. And most of the time, it's another trillion practically on the military.
Oh, 100%. And now Trump wants to raise the defense budget quite literally over $1 trillion. I mean, the jokes are writing themselves at this point. You know, the United States can cut their military budget by $200 billion, and they would still surpass China by tens of maybe $100 billion in military spending. All this money is going to the military. It's because of these massive contracts from Lockheed Martin. It's a wealth gap that is occurring. And you're seeing year by year more Americans drowning in debt, and the government's doing nothing about it. And I just don't understand why. What hope am I supposed to have that it's going to get better if it's getting worse and worse? And that's why people are hearing these new ideas from Tucker Carlson, from Thomas Massey, who just got defeated by AIPAC, essentially, so he lost his seat. So if you even dare question, these things are knocked out. And we thought Trump could do it, and he comes in and wants to raise the military budget even higher. I mean, at what point do we just I don't want to give up hope, but at what point do we look at the writing on the wall and say, this is just the reality, that it's going to just have a continuing to draw a division of wealth in this country that's just not going to change?
Speaking of a troubling reality, you're absolutely right. I looked this up the other day. And right after World War II, we were essentially spending in our military, on our military, somewhere around $15 billion. That's it. That was the budget for our military. By the way, at that time, we had the best performing military in the entire world, right? And we were respected because of that military. Today, some people would say it's over $2 trillion that we are actually in real dollars, because a lot of the costs are hidden. It's at like $2 trillion that we spend on our military and on our defense budget. And guess what? We're getting our butts kicked by Iran. So he wants pay more, get less? Is that the story we're seeing here?
Yeah, they got their butts kicked by Houthis literally in 2025, and they thought they could go beat Iran. So why are we having to pay more and more money, increase the military budget, to go fight wars that, honestly, this isn't 2003 Iraq anymore. The playing field is becoming very level, because you're seeing blocks of countries like Russia, China, and Iran that are coming together, realizing this threat, which is essentially the American military at this point. The American military is in the Middle East. It's in Europe. It's in the South Pacific. They're encroaching with military bases all against these countries. And now these countries have came together, and they're doing asymmetric warfare, like drones and missiles, and like we see with the Strait of Hormuz right now, they're attacking the American economy, and it is successful. It is highly successful right now in the Strait of Hormuz. There was a report that came out a few days ago that Trump is now willing to do a deal with Iran that doesn't have anything to do with nuclear enrichment. It only has to do with Strait of Hormuz. This is capitulation. It's embarrassment. And yet again, I just fall back to it. It doesn't have to be like this. Why is it like this? It is strict stupidity.
Do Americans know, and I know by that, I know you can't speak for all Americans, obviously, but you're a very connected person, and you've got a huge reach. Millions and millions of people follow you, so you've got a pretty good sense of what Americans are probably thinking. Do you believe that Americans now know that this war in Iran has been a failure and that we're actually losing? Or is it 50-50? What's your breakdown of that?
I would say, as of this point, it's probably roughly a 60-40, 50-50 type of split. But day by day, we're seeing more Americans understand that this is becoming a failure. You know, this was supposed to be what Trump said, like a four-week operation type of thing. And now we're in August. It's August, and we're still involved in this. The gas prices are still high. It is a forever war, the forever war that we were promised would never happen again. We thought we'd learn from Afghanistan, thought we'd learn from Iraq, from Syria, from Libya, turning these countries into failed states, essentially. We thought that we would have learned better. And that is basically the biggest point with Americans right now. It's, oh, we're doing another war in the Middle East. Why are we still over in the Middle East? It doesn't even have to do with Iran, essentially. It just has to do with the fact that we're fighting again. And day by day, whether it's gas prices, grocery prices, because of the fertilizer issues now, Americans are not only seeing it on the TV. Fox News, CNN will tell you it's going great. Israel's doing a tremendous job. But the reality is the paycheck. The reality is your wallet. When your wallet is continuing to get thrashed around by higher gas prices because oil is spiking because of the Strait of Hormuz, which happened after the war started, you come to the understanding that this is going bad. It's affecting me. So more and more people are 100% starting to turn on this idea of a conflict in the Middle East, regime change in Iran.
What's your take on Israel's government right now and Israel in general and its desire to manifest almost a constant dominion over American foreign policy and American politicians? Where do you see that right now?
I would say it's dwindling, to be quite honest. And I feel that they're panicking, understanding that this might be the last chance they actually have of pursuing this dream they've had forever, which is regime change in Iran. That's what they've always wanted. And now the Israelis are in a state of panic, understanding that the American mindset is shifting away from them. The European mindset is completely gone away from them, and the Russian mindset, the Chinese, was never with them in the first place. So now you have the American mindset, the American public is fully shifting very rapidly against the Israelis, and the Israeli government understands this. That's why they're pushing these social media programs, $7,000 per post, essentially, to try to push this pro-Israel content. They've bought stakes into TikTok and stuff like that because they're trying to control the narrative. So from the actions we're seeing of Netanyahu basically begging Trump to restart the war in Iran, from failure to adhere by the ceasefire in Lebanon, which makes the war in Iran continue, it is a state of panic. There's no more patience in Israel, and we're seeing this as well with the midterm elections coming up. $60 million for a single seat in Congress? That is absurd. $60 million.
That's insane to think about.
That is crazy. A country like Israel. It's embarrassing. I would say it's a state of panic. They're running out of patience. They are finally understanding that maybe their time is running out. But until we see real change, of course, on the reality on the ground in the Middle East, we can't jump to conclusions.
How big of a disappointment do you believe Mr. Trump has been, if you believe that he's been a disappointment?
He has been a disappointment. I voted for him 2 years ago, and it's very disappointing to see. I remember this. I spoke to my mom about this 2 weeks ago. We were in the kitchen, and I told her, we were speaking about Trump, and I said, do you remember the inauguration in 2025? We were in the living room watching it. We had a sense of pride. We had a sense of joy that maybe America could be brought on the right track. And we were in the kitchen about a year and a half later talking about it, and it was just utter disappointment. It was sadness. That the hope we had of a better America with Trump, the hope we had with this guy who was shot, who had a mugshot, who was almost arrested, had a felony, we thought, this is the guy that the deep state is attacking. And it turns out it was all a sham. Turns out he fell perfectly in line. Once he was in the government, he fell in line immediately, launching wars in the Middle East, telling us that housing prices aren't his priority, that we just have to deal with the gas prices, and going on Fox News and telling us that we have to fight these wars, we have to give money to overseas, and that now the new narrative from the Republican Party is this Islamic communist push. It's just a straight attack on our intelligence. And a year later, Trump telling us to trust the plan, that everything is going fine, it's another attack on our intelligence. And yet again, it's just sad, and it's like watching, feeling the hope sucked out. And I'm, you know, your average conservative right-wing guy come from a small town, so the consensus there was the same. We'll vote for Trump. Maybe things can get better. But there was a big support base this time. We saw a lot of people come together with hope that we can finally get on the right track, that this would be it, that this truthfully could have been the most important election of our lifetime. And the only results are that America continues down this path that everyone is against.
I call this the Russia paradox. How paradoxical or how weird or ironic do you think it is that, as you have been saying, we give all of this money to all of these countries, and all of these countries that we generally give the money to simply take the money and do very little, if anything, for us at all? And I'm talking about Israel, and I'm talking about Ukraine. Meanwhile, you have a country like Russia that has never asked for a single penny, doesn't want any money, and has enough resources to be able to feed the American people, have trade and weapons relationships with the United States that would keep us in a good place for years and years to come. And yet that's the country that we treat like dog poop. Isn't that a paradox?
I 100% agree with you. In a perfect world, the U.S., China, and Russia, and every country on the planet would work together in peace and harmony, and we would trade amongst each other, and everyone would live a beautiful life. But the United States can't have it that way. The U.S. government, the deep state, the CIA, they refuse to allow another country to be stronger. That's why China's demonized. That's why Russia's demonized. That's now why Iran and the Middle East is being demonized, because they pose a threat to the Israelis. The U.S. just will never allow this to happen. In Russia, like you said, they would never ask for a dime. They've never asked for a dime.
They don't need it.
They have to be in NATO. They have to join us in an alliance. And the U.S. told them no twice. They even told previously the Soviet Union no. And of course, now Putin came to the table and said, we want to talk. It's going to be rejected. There was a START treaty, I believe is the name of it, that limited strategic nuclear weapons. And the U.S. just let it expire. And the Russian foreign ministry, I remember this last year, was coming out day by day. We want to negotiate. We want to engage in diplomacy. We want to make the world a safer place and stop this threat from emerging from an expired treaty. And the Americans just let it expire. There was no negotiation. There's no real negotiation with Iran right now. There's no real negotiation with Russia regarding Ukraine right now. Even though we see time and time again, the Iranians yeah. want to have a deal. The Russians want to have a deal. Diplomacy is there. The Russians negotiated in Turkey within 1 month of the war starting. The Iranians are showing that they can restrain themselves. Then the Chinese as well. China hasn't started the war in decades.
No, right.
Why is China? Yeah, why is China this big problem? China's military bases aren't near us. China has really good products. I'm probably wearing some Chinese on me right now. Why can we not just work together? And that's the question that it boils back down to the CIA, to deep state. And this is why we're asking these questions right now. Why can't we work together? And I want the answers. You want the answers. The world wants the answers.
You know, I've been doing this for a long time, and I rarely met someone with your sense of understanding and cogency. Based on, you know, you're obviously a young guy, but you really understand this stuff, and you're so good at articulating it and why it means what it means. So I got to tell you, I'm very much impressed with you, and I want to thank you for taking time to. I was bragging about you the other day, and I said let's get this guy on, and here you are. So I'm glad you were able to join us again, Ethan. You're a good guy. You're a smart guy.
I appreciate it. It's always an honor to speak to you, Rick. I appreciate the invitation.
That's fantastic. Well, we'll look for you again very soon. Well, that's it from us. You can see parts of this conversation that I just had with Ethan, which is really unique because he's got a very American perspective, Southern American perspective, conservative Southern young American perspective, and that's what makes it so unique. So to understand where his mindset was 2 or 3 years ago and where it is now is really fascinating. To see how America is kind of developing. And sometimes, you know, you can see it through the eyes of one particular person, in this case, Ethan. So we really are appreciative of that. Parts of this will be on Spotify. Maybe you think I'm wrong. Maybe he's wrong. Let us know what you think, either on X or on Spotify, whatever's left on YouTube, which we're still there, believe it or not, or on BitChute, which is my favorite, because on BitChute, you will not be canceled, you will not be demonetized, and your material, your content will never disappear. Check it out. Thanks for being with us. I'm Rick Sanchez, and thanks for letting us into your homes.